It's time to go one-on-one with DP. Coming at you live from the Koppel Chevrolet GMC Studios, here is your host, Derek Pearson. Brought to you by Mary Ellen's Food for the Soul on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
All right, welcome into Ticket Week Nights. Once again, Harrison Arndt on the ones and twos. When 6 o'clock hits, I will carry you through, at least behind the ones and twos here on Ticket Week Nights. We will have DP joining us shortly, but he's coming back from his road trip down to the San Diego Mojo. I should call it a work trip. He had called the game there. Unfortunately, Supernovas fall short in that one. They lose the match 3-2 in that one. Went five sets against the San Diego Mojo. So again, Supernova is still tallying about 12 wins on the season, still behind the Atlanta Vibe. The Atlanta Vibe had a fantastic start to the Pro Volleyball Federation, currently sitting at a 17-5 record. And again, Supernova's at 2, but still not a spot, bad spot to be for the Supernovas. They got some season left here, but they're in position to go ahead and try to make a playoff run. But the Atlanta Vibe have been impressive, and that San Diego Mojo go ahead and steal one from the Supernovas. So DP, give or take about 10, 15 minutes here, he'll be joining me in studio as well. And if you guys want to join in the show, as always, you can hop in on the streams, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Allo Channel 961. The Starter Heyman text line will still be open to you guys, 402-464-5685. And DP gave me a little bit of rundown. It's an awesome time in the sports world. You got NFL draft coming up. Of course, the NBA playoffs have been exceptional, especially in round one. The West has been, every game has been pretty close for the most part. Even with the East, there's been some prizes there. If you're not paying attention to the Indiana Pacers or Tyrese Halliburton at all this season, they had a big win against the Bucks last night, and it was an all-around clinic. Tyrese Halliburton led the team in assists, but it was all around great ball movement. Their assist numbers show it. And the Bucks could be in a little bit of hot water, because I'm not sure if the Pacers have been given their due respect. Small market team, if you don't have NBA League Pass, you probably didn't have a ton of opportunity to even watch the Indiana Pacers. But Tyrese Halliburton, not sure what the ceiling is yet, but he's going to be special, I think, as long as he stays healthy. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and dive into the NBA playoffs. And as always, 402-464-5685, you guys are welcome to join in. But I want to start there. And like I said, DP will be joining me, coming straight from Omaha as well. So shout out DP. The guy never stops working. Despite calling a game that went to five sets all the way in San Diego, he gets down here in Omaha, and what's his first thing? Heading straight to the workplace. So DP, again, will be joining us, and shout out to him, always working. But let's go ahead and start here. And I mentioned that Bucks-Pacers series, a little bit surprised that one. You got the six-seeded Pacers versus the number three Bucks. And I think a lot of people are riding off the Pacers, but they did their job. You look at all these playoff series, the main goal, if you're that lower seed, is can we steal one on the road? It's going to set up, just statistically, way better odds for success for you to actually pull out an upset. And let's go through the box score in this one, because again, Pacers, clinic in terms of passing the ball. And I don't think Pascal Siakam got enough attention as well. Great move by the Indiana Pacers to go ahead and bring him down there. I think with that Toronto Raptors run with Kawhi Leonard, a lot of people are really high on him. And obviously, Kawhi Leonard moves on. You have some years where they're really trying to force Pascal Siakam to be that superstar caliber player, but I just don't know if there's enough help around him. And now you're seeing him on a team that he fits really well on, in a dominant performance by him. 16 for 23 from the floor, 3 for 4 from the three-point line, racks up a total of 37 points, 10 rebounds, in 6 assists. So a solid double-double, a 37-point double-double at that, puts in 11 rebounds. But this is what I was talking about with the assist. That starting lineup, they play so well together. Siakam, 6 assists. Nesmith, 7 assists. Turner, he puts in 6 as well. Nembhard puts in 3. And then, like I said, Tyrese Halliburton drops 12 assists on the night. And then some good production off the bench. Obi Toppin now on the Pacers. He puts in 9 points as well. And that's all the scoring you're getting it on the bench. But nonetheless, you're getting some good minutes out there. Even though a guy like TJ McConnell, not necessarily the biggest threat out there, but plays enough. And excuse me, he did drop 6 points on him, 2 for 6 from the floor. Just some good defense as well. But what I like about this Indiana Pacers team is just how well they move the ball. If you like to watch pretty basketball, you have to watch the Pacers. And Tyrese Halliburton, when he was on the Sacramento Kings, I was a little bit surprised that they moved on from him so quickly. I understand they had a guy in De'Aaron Fox who they want to lead that team into that next chapter, whatever it may be. But now you're looking at the Sacramento Kings, another disappointing season. Last year, the Sacramento Kings, the number one offense in the NBA. You flash forward to this year, still a lethal offensive team, but the defensive numbers did not do them any favors, and it showed up in the win-loss total, and it led to them being a play-in team getting bounced out. They got the revenge on the Warriors, but that's pretty much where it ended for the most part. So again, you look at a team like the Sacramento Kings, yes, maybe they have a shot to stir things up, but I really thought that Tyrese Halliburton went a better move to at least hold on to him and see what you have, because he showed flashes of this elite playmaking ability pretty early, and he was all bought in on playing for the Sacramento Kings. That was one of those franchises that he really appreciated, that they took a chance on him, and he was playing great basketball there. So again, I think that move from moving on from him, I don't know in hindsight if they're going to look favorably on that maneuver. And I like some of the other things the Kings have done. I think Sabonis was a sneaky good trade last season to get him in there. A little another underrated player, great playmaker all around, not the best rim protector, but a skilled player in his game with Tyrese Halliburton just made perfect sense in the world. But nonetheless, they move on. But the Pacers, they come back, beat the Bucks 125-108, and it really wasn't close all game long. The Indiana Pacers, from quarter one to quarter four, outscored the Bucks every single quarter. The Bucks, for the most part, couldn't really gain any momentum in their home arena. And it does raise some flags, you know, looking at the Milwaukee Bucks. You fire your head coach, you know, after losing to the Miami Heat last year, and then the Miami Heat go all the way on a massive run to the finals. Now they lose to the Denver Nuggets as expected. I mean, that's my favorite for this year. I think the Celtics have a chance to shake things up, and we'll talk about those guys as well, because if you haven't heard, they're a, I think, 14.5-point favorite over the Miami Heat tonight. So the Boston Celtics, if you're going to pick any sort of team to try to shake the Nuggets if they make it to the finals, you're probably looking at the Boston Celtics. But again, give credit to the Pacers. I'm not going to put this series in the books. I think this matchup's a lot closer than I initially gave it credit for. Even though I was a fan of Tyrese Halliburton, it's the other guys around him, and in particular, Pascal Siakam. He's a great two-way player. He can hit the three ball. He's long, lengthy, and he doesn't really rest on defense. He's a guy that plays solid two-way game all quarter long. And, you know, if you want to factor in conditioning, he's one of those guys that just doesn't ever seem to get tired out there. So keep an eye on the Pacers. If I were to go through the series in this NBA playoffs, that's a team I'd keep my eyes on. I really like what they're doing. I think they kind of get the Bucks in a little bit of a panic. And I'm not entirely sold on Doc Rivers. And that's another move where we can get into the coaching of the NBA, but why they were so eager to move on and then bring in a guy who is, for the most part, pretty unproven. Yes, he gets teams. He brings them to the playoffs. But that Game 7 record is atrocious. And with the talent Doc Rivers has had in the past, great roster after great roster after great roster, it didn't seem like a smart move. You want to get a guy in there who has a little bit of a resume that he can develop teams. Now, Doc Rivers, not the worst coach out there, but his whole stint with the Milwaukee Bucks has just been strange this year, to say the least. He kind of came in complaining right off the bat about the management, about the quick turnover, and just some really unusual comments. And then even still, we'll still let those slip out there every now and then, calling out his own roster on road games to the media. I get it. Maybe the idea is to fire those guys up during the regular season, how they're not winning those road games. But it's stuff like that where I don't understand Doc Rivers bringing that to the media. That seems like a locker room discussion, not where I'm going to go on the podium and put my own roster on the spot for the world to hear. It was still a great record overall, and I get it. You're frustrated with the road losses, but to say, I feel like, paraphrasing here, that I'm the only one focused, I'm looking around, I see a lot of guys not locked in, I get it. That's a locker room conversation, not one that you have to the media. So then ESPN can write a bunch of articles about the Milwaukee Bucks not mentally focused on road games. And our source is the head coach, Doc Rivers. So I didn't like the move. And I think coaching matters a lot in the playoffs. I talked about this last night with DeMarne Personnel. When they got rid of Vogel, Los Angeles Lakers, one season, the bubble, if you want to call it a Mickey Mouse trophy, whatever you will, he gets that team a title nonetheless. He gives the Lakers, with Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, LeBron James, just a great veteran crew, if I were to put it, a team that has a ton of experience under the belt, and he's able to get those guys a ring. And then you have two bad seasons where in one of those years, you have not only LeBron, but AD as well, in and out with injury. Everyone had that meltdown when everyone saw LeBron finally go down with an injury that lasted longer than just a couple of days. And then the next season, again, disappointing, but the roster construction around it never made sense to me. And then to bring in a guy in Darvin Ham to think that's the right move, no sense. It makes no sense. I think about this with Bo Pelini when we hired Mike Riley. We go from Bo Pelini, whether you think it was the right move to get rid of him or not, the point is you got a coach that was under 500 in his coaching career. How is that an upgrade in any way, shape, or form? So with the playoffs, I know the NBA in particular is one of those games where you can almost equate the refs out, especially during the regular season, because it is, in my opinion, a much more minimal role compared to, obviously, you compare it to the NFL, the coaches have a massive role in the game plan. NBA, you want to get your five best players. They're veterans. They play the game their entire lives. You can trust them to make some of those reads on the fly. You just got to set them up and they'll take care of the rest. But then when you look at how it's gone, hiring coaches that haven't had that great track record, especially in the playoffs, that small amount of upgrade that a coach can provide in the playoffs is what pushes teams over the edge. You look at the Denver Nuggets and Malone, their head coach, and how he's developed that team, how he understands how each intricate player's role is. That is massive in the playoffs. You need continuity. I don't think it works very well when you just bring in a coach out of nowhere, especially one with not a great track record, expecting him to fully know the roles of all those players and how to set them up best for success. And now you're kind of seeing the Lakers fans even get upset about Darvin Ham being the head coach. If you go on any of their threads, anywhere on social media, a lot of people are already calling for the Lakers to move on and get another coach. The constant movement of head coaches in the NBA just feels like a massive mistake for a lot of organizations. And this isn't just on the Lakers, but you want that continuity because when you do get to the playoffs, defense tightens up. You can no longer just trust your best five guys, your best five starters to go out there and win you the game. You need to have a good game plan. You need to understand what do my players do best. And I think that's why the Denver Nuggets just look unstoppable. They have had those players, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, Jamal Murray, Jokic, and even when some of those guys were hurt, Jamal Murray in particular, when Jokic was really starting to come up and be the guy we know him as today, they stuck with it. They didn't make hasty moves. They didn't blame it on the coach. They didn't blame it on a few players. They held on to guys. Michael Porter Jr., you could have easily punted on that guy, and not because his play was bad, but the IR report might have scared you a little bit. Anything spinal injury-wise is going to put some hesitancy on whether you want to keep that guy around or not. But they stuck with him, and then what happens in game two? Jokic, he makes what tries to look like he's trying to gain a foul, chuck it up. Maybe it was trying to get it to Aaron Gordon. It looked like a shot to me, trying to get quick three easy free throws, but Aaron Gordon manages to salvage it, kicks it out to Michael Porter Jr., and he makes a massive shot. And all those players are so aware of their role. You get to the end game situations, Jokic and Aaron Gordon, Jamal Murray, those three guys work incredibly well together. That's one of the things that makes Jokic so unstoppable. It's, yes, he's great in itself, but it's the team around him, and they know how to play around him because they've played with each other for so long, and they have a head coach that understands each player's key elements and their weaknesses. And then you get a coach in Darvin Ham where this is going to hurt his coaching career right off the bat, just because, again, he's in there with a bunch of guys trying to piece it all together, and he's just getting killed for it. And I can't even entirely blame him, because I don't know if I necessarily love the roster construction around the Lakers either. I think they're a good team. You got LeBron and Anthony Davis. Those two alone should scare most teams in the league. And I do think the Lakers, as we had walk-on weekly, Jack Hoiberg, who now works with the San Antonio Spurs, brother of Sam Hoiberg, by the way. So you can imagine that NBA basketball connection. That's just a basketball family through and through. But he kind of pointed that out, where the Los Angeles Lakers, despite their shortcomings, that's still a good enough team where they can beat just about anyone on any given night, any series, not even just one game. Lakers are playing the number one seed, OKC Thunder. I like their odds a lot more than the two-seeded Denver Nuggets. That's just a brutal matchup, especially when you look at the stats. LeBron James, the first time ever in his career history to lose six straight playoff games. And it started with the sweep in the Western Conference Finals to the Denver Nuggets, and now they're down 2-0 to the Denver Nuggets once again. It's a tough matchup, but again, I think even if you had a coach that had a little bit of continuity, I get it. People are upset with Frank Vogel. I still think you keep that guy around. I blame that entirely on roster construction and players being hurt unexpectedly. And then to kick him out and then bring in him again, I don't think he's the terrible coach out there. I think you can probably point at other guys, but it is just a quick turnaround. And let's just be real here. It feels like LeBron's running the show, as he's done many times. It may be right or wrong, but you would love to have a head coach in there that LeBron trusts, that the players trust, that believe that they can set themselves up in the best position to kind of upset this series and find a way to at least just steal one. I mean, I'll be surprised if the Lakers don't get swept at this point. They put everything they had in that second game to have a 20-point lead and for it to all fall apart on just an incredible run by Jokic and company. That's just deflating. And everyone wanted to attack D'Angelo Russell. He's the reason we lost game one. How can we win if D'Angelo Russell, our quote-unquote X-factor, isn't going to show up? He showed up in game two. He showed up in game two with great numbers and still not good enough. And you give credit to Jamal Murray for hitting one of the coolest game winners I've seen in a long time over a 7-foot Anthony Davis. But it just really put a dagger in that Lakers team. When you have your two best players in Anthony Davis and LeBron James and their post-game press conferences with an aggressive mic drop, it doesn't bode well, at least in my opinion. It looks like defeat the way I read it. So maybe there's a chance out there, but the way I see it, Los Angeles Lakers got some serious problems. As I'm talking here, we got the boss man right behind me. DP rolling in, fresh from Omaha, coming down from the San Diego Mojo. Quick turnaround. The guy just must love work like nobody else out here. But Derek Pearson now joining me one-on-one with DP. And as always, you guys are welcome to join in. 402-464-5685. Sartor Hamann text line, Face to the Voice, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Allo Channel 961. But nonetheless, DP, I know you had a busy night, busy travel. How's it going, man?
It's good to be back. These trips to San Diego are tough. Once you say that out loud, you realize how silly it is. You're at the beach.
I had to smile there a little bit.
You're going to the beach. It was actually nicer here than it was there.
Okay.
It was cloudy. There's no sun in San Diego. It's still aesthetically, it's gorgeous. You play, the Supernovas play, at San Diego State University in their gym.
Massive arena.
Yeah.
I will say that. Yeah. I don't know if I get it first year, but I do like when those, especially when it's a first year in it, get a smaller venue. So it just helps that noise in there a little bit more.
Well, I mean, here's the weird thing. Like, so when you pull up, everything around it is busy, like because it's a campus. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I don't know whether the Aztec baseball, softball had home matches, home games. Don't know. There weren't a lot of students there. Like if you go to Supernovas, there's a lot of students.
Mm-hmm. There's everybody at those games. Those games get packed.
Yeah, and the weird thing was, of the, you know, a third of the people there last night were Supernova fans. And then if you went back a week or 2 weeks, so we were out there on April 2nd, and they had some home matches in between where they drew pretty well, mm-hmm. like 3,500, 4,000 folks. But for whatever reason, on Tuesday night, nobody's coming. And it's Renee and I were talking about it last night that it's a weird, because it's a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bowl.
So yeah, we got some Rico stories running up and down that bowl last night too.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny. It was so funny. But it's a bowl. It's like the old Memorial. It's like Memorial Stadium on the lower bowl.
It's like Iowa, right? Is that a good comparable?
It's a bowl, and it's really weird because I don't know what they did with it, right? Like, I think it was where the football stadium was, and they put a basketball arena inside the bowl. Mm-hmm. And then when you pull up to the outside of the building, in the parking lot, there's concrete bleacher seats. So at some point, the thing turned around or whatever. But like, literally, there's like 1,000 seats facing the bus. I was like, oh, that's really weird. Just like, not really a thing to do. So yeah, you're providing your own juice, and it's really tough. You're pros. You're trying to figure it all out. And again, everywhere in the league, in the Federation, is good.
Mm-hmm.
So going 2-2 against San Diego doesn't really hurt you, other than the fact that in the back of their minds, if they end up matched up with you in the playoffs,
in the back of your head a little bit.
You're giving hope. Mm-hmm. Renee and I talk about it a lot. Hope. Giving hope that you're equal. Or now they've got some players. And you know, we knew the last trip out to San Diego. Like I told Renee Saunders that, listen, this is different. Right? Like, when you look at the team play, one, they started late, so that was a big deal. And then as their team sort of evolved, like, I'm like, wait a minute, they got some players. And the girl, the young lady, Timmy Thomas Adelara, is a banger, man. She's a banger. Like, it from anywhere on the floor, she can sniper you. Anywhere on the floor. And she just is violent in her swing. She elevates. She takes advantage of matchups, right? And then in the fifth set last night, the difference was that we couldn't get the matchup off with the setter versus Timmy Thomas Alara. Like, we couldn't get, she's just over top of him. And the fifth set, it's a race to 15. If the matchup doesn't go the way, the rotations don't go the way you want. Well, Saturday night in Omaha, the rotation went well in the fifth set for Supernovas, and they got a win. But in St. Louis, it didn't happen. So there'll be a little bit of time Friday. Grand Rapids, who is sitting at 10-9,
mm-hmm.
right behind the Supernovas.
Because the Supernovas are still at 12, right?
Uh huh. And
Atlanta, look,
here's the thing. Atlanta got beat.
Well, yeah, that's the one thing. It's a good thing Atlanta got beat.
Atlanta got beat. So you get to see that there is a way to get this thing done. As a matter of fact, I mean, you know, when you look at the matchups, you go, okay, Grand Rapids got them.
Mm-hmm.
Cale Caffey from Nebraska and Texas went on a service run, a couple of them, as a matter of fact. And they're talented. You know, they're talented. So all of it is this Federation. I mean, who, like, you're in the final 25% of the season, you know, five matches left. Friday, Grand Rapids in Omaha, then a bit of a break until they head to Columbus, which, you know, last time we went to Columbus, it didn't go well.
Mm-hmm. And Columbus is one of those teams, too. That's,
yeah,
they've beaten the best of the best. I think they got maybe even a couple wins over the Fury.
Yeah, and they're scrappy in that they're fighting for their playoff life. So all the matches have meaning now, and everybody's scrapping. Like, you're trying to, you know, it's an interesting set. So we'll go Grand Rapids come here. Then on the 4th, we'll go to Columbus. On the 6th, we go to Vegas. On the 7th, we play Vegas. And then we go to Grand Rapids after that. And am I missing a home match?
Yeah, you met Columbus Fury on the 9th, and then Grand Rapids are on the road on the 12th. So you got one home game versus the Columbus Fury.
Yeah. When's Columbus here?
That's May 9th, Thursday.
Okay. So, yeah. So that's the, you know, you're going to face everybody that's battling for something and an opportunity. Now, on the bright side, the addition of Stephanie Samedy from Minnesota, and Husker volleyball fans are very familiar with Stephanie Samedy. And she, in her first appearance with Supernovas, had 10 kills, 10 digs, 2 blocks. Like, she wasn't in the starting rotation. She did this coming off the bench. And they're still getting to know her, and she's still getting to know them, but she's going to be a factor. Like, she's going to be a factor. The Supernovas also losing Gina Mancuso, Przoski, losing.
Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quiksilver Scientific's Push Catch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quiksilver Scientific's Push Catch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And Danielle Hart, who was the starting season middle blocker, losing Nia Reed, all of those things play into it. But everybody in the Federation is going through their changes. But other players are coming in and being a part of it. So, you know, it's pretty cool. Just to be a part of it and watch it up close. Just I'm fascinated by the phenomenon, right? And watching something brand new just kind of grow and explode. And I'll say this, that you know, Friday night, it's an 8:30 first serve. So CBS Sports will carry it.
Let's go. That's awesome.
Well, and then but here's what you want, right? And I'm not bigger than the message. So I know that that's going to draw more eyes and ears to it. But this is an opportunity for Nebraska to show out again.
Mm-hmm.
And if done well, first of all, they're giving out these really cool glow-in-the-dark t-shirts, right? Which means the game presentation is going to be on fire.
Oh, yeah. I will say the Supernovas do it right in their venue.
Right?
It's awesome.
Right? And, but this would be the night to go over 13, 14,000. Like, I think it'll happen in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Because what's the record right now? 12,000?
12 plus.
Yeah, I know. So, I think it's like 12,500, close to there.
So I would imagine that that happens. But I also, you don't want to just rely on that. Plus, you know, it'll be an additional boost, those extra points to have, you know, to have the crowd there. So yeah, I'm a big fan of watching people develop and grow and expand, and to watch these arenas where it really happens. There were a ton of fans flying back to Omaha who were Supernovas fans.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Like it's starting, like it's that thing. Oh, Supernovas are on the plane. Like, you don't have to explain, like, who are they? No. People know. People are paying attention. People are aware of it. People are being supportive. And then I know that social media responses have been up and that people are paying attention to it. So it's pretty cool to watch and pretty cool to kind of watch it move along. So through all of that. And then, you know, not for nothing, but tomorrow is the NFL draft, And not for nothing, but you're in the middle of the NHL and NBA playoffs. And not for nothing, but you're in the big drive for Big Ten softball, and you're in the drive for Big Ten baseball, and the Huskers need to right the ship and get it right and figure out how to just get over the edge and get it over the hump. Shout out to Georgetown baseball. They're coming to Creighton, and Coach Edmund Thompson, of course, he's friends and family. It's Barry Thompson's brother, the head coach for Georgetown. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to be in Creighton. I'm like, well, I'm doing a volleyball game at 8:30, but, you know, you're there all weekend, so, you know, spring game. Well, okay. But they play at night Saturday, so there's no conflict. So mm-hmm. we'll be able to pop up to Omaha, pop to Omaha and watch the Hoyas. And then Sunday, probably as well, at least make a bid. We'll see what happens with that. So there's lots going on. Let me ask you if the name Roman Gabriel means anything to you.
Roman Gabriel.
Okay. So Roman Gabriel in the 60s and 70s. There was a year in the NFL where Roman Gabriel was the best quarterback in the league in the NFL. And Gabriel played for the Rams and he played for the Philadelphia Eagles. But Roman Gabriel, he put up big yardage in a time where not everybody put up a ton. Mm-hmm. But he led the NFL in passing. I want to say it was 69, somewhere between 69 and 73. He led the NFL. I don't have the stats in front of me, but he led the NFL in passing. And the thing about it to me was, again, in that era of football, I mean, Sonny Jurgensen led a long stretch of leading the league in passing. Johnny Unitas before him. John Hadle had a run. I'm trying to run through my mind of who was slinging the ball around pretty well in the course of those years. Jim Hart from the St. Louis Cardinals. And it's weird that was kind of my birth as a football fan. Mm-hmm. And so I remember, like, there weren't 32 teams. There were 24, I want to believe. And it was a clean split between the AFL and the NFL. And as a matter of fact, they didn't really want to give the AFL credit because the AFL was the throw it around league. They were the pass it league, right?
CBA, NBA, all over
right,
again.
Right, like you went through it. East Coast, West Coast, you go through it. You same for baseball. And one of these one-on-ones, I'm going to go back and take you back through the expansion of baseball, Major League Baseball, to going out west. Because you have to remember, like, everything was pocketed in the Northeast.
And that's probably fair for, like, every pro league at that time.
The core of it, For the NBA was the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And for baseball, the same, because you'd have a Milwaukee pop up, right? The Chicago, Atlanta. There was nothing in Florida. There's nothing south of that, right? And then the expansion of them deciding to go when the Dodgers moved to LA, but then realizing that, oh, we don't have a rival. Like, we don't have anybody out here. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have anybody out here. And if you really want, there's a really cool documentary that talks about Chavez Ravine, the Dodger Stadium, and the process of the Dodgers moving from Brooklyn to LA and them trying to figure out where to put the stadium, right? And for those that have never been to Chavez Ravine, Chavez Ravine, it's a ravine. Like, it's really you pull up to the stadium in the main parking lot of the stadium, you're at the top of the stadium. They put the stadium into a space that wasn't necessarily natural. Same for Candlestick. It's on the side of a mountain, bro. You're like, wait a minute. But for football, it was the Northeast The AFL and the NFL, the NFL was the grinded. I mean, matter of fact, the Baltimore Colts, Baltimore was still in the NFL before they moved over. Mm-hmm. It was interesting times to watch the AFL. Daryl LaMonica, Lynn Dawson. I'm trying to name the AFL quarterbacks. Well, John Hadle for the Chargers.
let me call my dad. He'll
right. Yeah, but that's like for all the old heads out there. Yep. If you think about, you know, that even the black quarterback for Denver, like that's a thing that happened, a receiver who ended up playing quarterback, that if you went around that time, Houston Oilers with George Blanda playing in the Oilers, they had a couple of guys for Houston back when they were the Dallas Texans before they were the Cowboys. They were the Dallas Texans. And it was really kind of cool to watch because NFL played early.
Mm-hmm.
So all the early time slots was the NFL. And that was all CBS. And then afternoon would happen and everybody would flip over to channel to NBC, whatever the channel was, because the AFL was playing. And the NFL was Tom Brookshire and Pat Summerall. The AFL was Al DeRogatis or Kyle Rote, and it evolved over time where it ended up being like Merlin Olsen was mm-hmm. the guy. But then as he retired and he went to acting, so imagine that you would go. there's a TV show of Merlin Olsen that came on right after the AFL. So
Rogers almost pulled off. Was it Price is Right? He was thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like it's pretty cool. But Roman Gabriel for the Rams. And they battled John Brody and the 49ers. They battled the Atlanta Falcons as much as they could. And they had, you know, Ken Reeves who competed, Spurrier. Atlanta tried everything to get somebody who could throw at the level of everybody else in the league. Craig Morton and the Cowboys before Staubach took over. The Giants, and you know, they ran their version of it. The Eagles had different quarterbacks come in and come and go. But Roman Gabriel led the league. He was the all pro, the all NFL. Four times made the Pro Bowl. When I went to Carolina to work with the Panthers, Roman Gabriel was a retired coach and he was around doing broadcasts. And Roman Gabriel gave me more food for thought outside of Joe Gibbs and the Redskins, Don Capers, et cetera. But he was just giving the information because he would just tell the stories of how great players were, just so we knew in the back of your mind that it wasn't just the 80s. And the 90s and the 2000s, go back in time and remember the Harold Jacksons, the great receivers, the Harold Carmichaels, who was 6'7" playing wide receiver back in the 70s. What? Like, you know, and the battles of 6'7" Harold Carmichael against 5'9" Pat Fisher from Nebraska, who played for the Redskins, and they would play twice a year. And the matchups would always end up in like a fist fight between the two of them because it was so hyped up that
it wouldn't cost you $2 million.
Right, right. Like it was a thing. And back then, you know, you spit the blood and keep it moving, yep. Right? You know, it was that kind of deal. But back then, you kind of identified people who were different, right? And Roman Gabriel, like that's a name. Mm-hmm. Like you know there's some meat and potatoes to it. There's a story behind it. And I never knew what that story was. Like I thought he was Italian or, you know, I thought he was Roman or something. Like I didn't, like, I was like, that's your name, right? Makes perfect sense to me. But come to find out he was Filipino. And Roman Gabriel is the only Filipino NFL MVP. Yeah.
That would have been 1969.
Yeah.
That was the year. And he had 2,549 yards.
Yeah, I mean, and those were, you know, those were 12 game seasons. So you know, you had to get it done in a short period of time against some defenders. And remember back then, it wasn't, hey, barely touch me pass coverage. They could grab you at the line of scrimmage and just tackle you if they want it.
That like, part, I think that part always gets forgotten. Like, you didn't even go 20 years and it's way different.
This is the thing. And I listened to Tyreek Hill say that he would give Deion some work. And I went, bro, that tells me that you don't know what you're talking about. Hey, you don't know what you're talking about. Because them dudes back then, listen, Mel Blount would have thrown Tyreek Hill into the third row.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tyreek Hill would have never gotten off the last group. You know why you didn't see a lot of small receivers back then? Because it was a physical game. Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah, them corners and safeties were bullies, bro. Them linebacker run a crossing route, they could clothes hang you while you were running the route and just like, oops, my bad.
Mm-hmm. Helmet pop off. Yep. I don't care. Keep playing.
Yep. I mean, it was a different time. But Roman Gabriel would tell the stories of, one, he would tell the stories of other great quarterbacks. And he would rattle off like these the stats and the stories of the guys he played against. And he rattled off defensive schemes that he would face. And he would rattle off down and distance and what they tried to do. Well, the football world lost Roman Gabriel today. And I wanted to spend just a little time whispering to him, because he whispered to me while he was here. Like, he had no reason to. Like, I was this kid from D.C. You know, the folks in Carolina didn't really know me that way.
Mm-hmm.
But Roman Gabriel heard me at an event and then came up and said, you know what? You get it.
That's awesome.
Right? Like, oh, man, come on. There are certain people in my life that I can say that about in every sport. I'm pretty fortunate and pretty blessed. And some people will say, when I first got here, people said, well, you're a name dropper. No, what I'm with this microphone, it's a responsibility and a blessing for me to call out the people who got me here.
Fair.
Right? And there's no way to say, listen, that if John Thompson will sit and feed you basketball IQ, if Joe Gibbs can talk to you about so much not football, I'm telling you, if there were 500 conversations with Joe Gibbs, 490 of them were not about X's and O's football. Joe Gibbs would tell you about family. He would tell you about his faith. He would tell you about reading people. He would tell you about the value of community. He always talked NASCAR, even when he was the best coach in the NFL. So you knew, I'm not surprised he'd go into racing, because that was like, that's what he talked about.
Yeah.
Jerry Sloan from the Utah Jazz and the Bulls, he was a farmer, man. That dude was a farmer, mm-hmm. man. He would come, like, he'd come to basketball practice, cowboy boots and a cowboy hat, a piece of straw in his mouth, and he would just talk about life. Like, if I asked him to break down the triangle, he would do that. But it was always stories about humanity that Jerry Sloan would tell you, that he always recruited, he wanted to coach good people. And that was how you could identify a good coach who wanted to coach good people. There are coaches that want the rogues and the thugs and the bullies. And he said, I don't need to do that. That's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Gibbs wasn't that Georgetown basketball era that was elite. People called them thugs. No, that was the racist element. When you talk about a group of guys that bought into team basketball, right? Like, we really worked to try to get people to play basketball the way John Thompson got that Hoya team to play defense first. Get me as close to the basket as possible. Defend hard. Take your breaks on offense, but go 100 on defense, right? Like, everything that every quality coach, blood and guts coach, all of them were about people. All the great people in sports. Who, like Don Capers. Don Capers walked into an expansion city. Charlotte had never had football before.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. That was a NASCAR town. Like, that was a North Carolina Duke basketball town. That was a pro wrestling town. And Don Capers came in and He brought in that old Pittsburgh Steeler mentality of play rough, play fair, play hard often. Right? That was what it was. And he went in and he said, you know what? Give me a little bit of time. And it took him 3 years to get his team to the NFC Championship game. 3 years, man. They were an expansion team in 94, 96. They were playing Packers in Lambeau Field. For,
that's
like,
incredible.
Like they beat the Cowboy triplets in Charlotte in one of the best nights of my life. And there were stars on that team, but there weren't stars on that team. The best player on that team was Kevin Green. Right? Mm-hmm. Legitimate Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Mills. Like, they had stars at linebacker. But you can't name their receivers. Like, even people who lived in Carolina. The running backs? You knew Tim Biakabutuka, but he wasn't the guy. Willie Green was the guy. Like, they were, I mean, this was amazing. Kerry Collins was still a baby. He was a baby. Wesley Walls, who should be in the Hall of Fame as a tight end, we don't even talk about Wesley Walls. Wesley Walls was elite. You can't name any member of the offensive line, but they were all my best friends because I've lived with the center, so I was around it. You can't name any of their front three, the three played in front of the four, because they were role players. They were all guys. Run stoppers, gap fillers, guys that sacrificed their stats so that those four linebackers could make plays. And Dom Capers was that guy all along. I've been blessed. And I want to use this, and it's fun, right? That in the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, right? That guys like Johnny Holiday, Brooks Robinson, Jim Palmer, when I was in Salt Lake City, he came into the station and Jim Palmer was scheduled to do 20 minutes and then leave. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm giddy. It's Jim Palmer.
Yeah.
And when we talk about great pitchers, you never hear Jim Palmer's name being mentioned. But let me tell you, Jim Palmer was a dude. Palmer came in, sat in the studio, and it's kind of what I want this to be, right? That no matter if somebody's in town,
mm-hmm.
just to walk in and that you can adapt and have the conversation with him. And I remember the Jazz were on the road, and so Ron Boone wasn't there, another great legend mm-hmm. that I got to spend, like the Iron Man of the NBA. So before the most consecutive game streak before AC Green was Ron Boone. You know, Jerron Boone's dad, right? And he's just that dude. But Jim Palmer comes in and supposed to do 20 minutes. And Jim Palmer says to me, wait, how's your mom? And my jaw hit the table because he had met my mother at an event in D.C. some 15 years ago. And he goes, your mother was so sweet.
That's incredible.
And you just went, what? He stayed the entire 3 hours just talking. I mean, some of his best matchups,
mm-hmm.
Him talking about the Dodgers World Series, Mets World Series, Reds World Series. Like, I'm just consuming, right? Yeah. Consuming. And then I say all of that to say that the message was, each of them told me a thing that was consistent. It's about the people. Sports is just the vehicle to watch people excel. Like, that's all it is. And so in how we talk about everything, whether it's the Huskers, whether it's the NBA, Major League Baseball, it's the people that wear the scarlet and cream that make all of this Huskers lore matter. The memories that are created because they were the people that they were. And then you learn what they go through to be as great as they are. Because all of them have to go through some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All of these student athletes that come to the ticket, they all go through some stuff. Like, we get to see and hear when they're having a tough week. And they may not share it on air, but we know.
Mm-hmm.
We know when something's leaning on them. We know when they're struggling. And when people sit out in the stratosphere and just throw dirt at them because envy, jealousy, right? That, oh, well, you're an athlete. I didn't get to do well, because you're not them.
And you didn't do the work.
You did. You were not them. There's a reason why they do and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Every athlete that comes in here is elite. They're an elite academic. They're an elite athlete. And they're elite in how they have to deal with things that the average student doesn't have to deal with.
Yeah. It's if anyone's hung around for Tickle Weeknights, you realize that pretty quick.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's I've said it before, but it's my least favorite argument I've ever heard is student athletes got it catered.
Oh, you don't. That means you're not one.
They're waking up, working out.
Yep.
Before class, then they go to class, then they got another workout. What am I eating? Can't get fast food. I got to make sure I'm taking care of my body right. Then I got to do film. Then I go talk to my coaches. Then I got to be a leader, because I can't just be acting like a hooligan out there because I have a name and I got to represent the university. It's a lot of pressure and a lot of work.
And everybody now has access to you.
Yeah, even harder.
Right? It's just tough. So shout out to those athletes and coaches and the fans who recognize the people. It is the adage that I coached by and I live by. Never choose the game over the people. The game is just a vehicle for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And how you cheer for it, who you cheer for, is a statement of what matters to you. And it's important. And the Huskers have, look, if you're rooting for Matt Rhule, remember the person. If you're rooting for Fred Hoiberg, remember the person. Remember, he goes home. He got a family. He got stuff to do. And then there's Rhonda Ravel. Remember that. Will Bolt. Remember that. Like, you go through, like Mark Manning, you go through and remember all of these athletes, all of these coaches. These are exceptional people doing exceptional things. And if we get it right, we're just going to cheer. Like, we're just going to cheer. And when it doesn't go that way, the right way, you just go, you know, okay. Okay, so to Roman Gabriel, to a lot of folks who share stories, like, that's what this building is for.
Mm-hmm.
We get to share sports stories, and these will be the stories. We can go back in time and pull those stories forward. I mean, David Turcotte, Ron Brown, right?
You got to get Turcotte back on, yeah, just for my sake.
Well, I mean, once the Supernovas are over, we'll fall back into a regular routine. And I can tell you, for folks that want to be a part of it, yeah, 101 is going to be a monster this summer, because with Barry Thompson, Everett Gray, Turcotte, Mike Menner, Ron Brown, we're going to flow with a bunch of folks and keep it regular and keep it consistent. And we'll just sit and chop it up. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be a lot of fun. Be sure to hang around, because we got more ahead here on Ticket Weeknights. And then Ticket Weeknights going forward, as DP said, it's only going to be a better and better product. And, you know, we're talking about the fans and how we got to support the university. Same thing to Ticket listeners out there. We can't appreciate the support, and you guys only make the product even better here, right here on 93.7 The Ticket. With that being said, though, we'll go ahead and wrap up one-on-one with DP. Don't go anywhere. We got the Don't Punt Hour up next with DeMarne Pearsonell, as always.